We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this hour of Focus, we will be talking about the state budget, the state of Illinois budget, and the continuing budget crisis that we're facing here in this state. According to a study by the National Conference of State Legislatures, the state of Illinois ended fiscal year 2010 in worse shape than any other state. It has been estimated that for fiscal 2011, now that's the fiscal year we are in right now, began last July, that the deficit, the state's deficit, could be as much as $11 billion. And combined with the carryover from past years, some people say we could be now looking at a deficit of $17 billion. Yesterday, Governor Quinn presented his budget address in Springfield, the beginning of what will be a very long process to craft a budget for fiscal 2012. That's the year, fiscal year that begins July 1st. He's proposed a $52.7 billion budget, one, though, that relies on very significant borrowing, $8.75 billion in borrowing to bring it into balance. And that is something that many Republicans in the General Assembly say that they would not approve. In this hour, we will try to shed some light on all of this as we talk with Robert Rich. He is director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. He's been here on this program before many times. He's been generous with his time with us, and we're pleased that he could be here and that we could talk. Questions are welcome, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. You can also send an email to will-talk@illinois.edu if you would like to contribute your thoughts that way. Either way, you can participate in the program. The only thing we ask is people just try to be brief so we can keep things moving along. But anybody is welcome to call. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Morning, David.
We appreciate it. And I will now say on the air just what I said to you just before we got started is that I feel that every time I read something about the state's fiscal situation, it rather than things becoming more clear to me, they seem to become less clear. And you said, yeah, that's kind of the way that it is. Let's start by talking about the current budget deficit. Now, something that I know that you and your colleagues have looked at and have come up with some numbers. So if we say right now where we are in fiscal 2011, actually, we're more than halfway through fiscal 2011. If you look at the current deficit and what we have carried over from the past, what is the budget deficit now?
It's at least $11 billion, and that is the $4 billion that is the deficit, even taking the new revenue into account, plus at least $6.5 billion in unpaid bills. Governor's estimate is $8.7 billion in unpaid bills. So now we're at almost $13 billion, and we've not even taken the pension issues into account. And we have the largest unfunded pension liability in the country. The legislature passed, as part of its January package, a borrowing to help make this year's payment on the pensions. But that was short about half of $1 billion. So we're somewhere between $12 and $15 billion in deficit, even with the new revenue enhancement that was passed in January.
All right. So it's not quite some of these numbers are a little bigger than where we are. But I do think back to back last fall, I think Dan Hines said, well, it wouldn't surprise him if when we got to about this point, we had a $15 billion deficit.
Right.
So we're sort of, you know, a billion here, a billion there. We're in the ballpark. All right. So then now.
But let me just say one thing of contrast.
Yes.
And that is when Governor Edgar became governor in the 1990s, he came in with a $1 billion deficit left over from the Thompson administration. And he would tell you that he felt that that was an incredible problem at $1 billion. Today, if you told our governor or any of the legislators that we had a $1 billion problem, they'd be happy. So we have, over the last 15, 16 years, grown from what was considered to be a great problem by Governor Edgar to a tremendous crisis.
Mm-hmm. So now what the governor is proposing for fiscal 2012, he has proposed this budget, which, to bring it into balance, it relies on this $8.75 billion borrowing, which is going to be a problem. Clearly, it sounds like it's going to be a problem for the General Assembly. Now, we do have and we do have this additional revenue coming from the tax increase that went into effect in January. So if looking at his projections, and that is a projection, what he's talking about borrowing the additional revenue from the tax increase, you know, so looking at what he's talking about borrowing, looking at what we're expecting to come in, looking at the expense side, the continuing expenses, the carryover, if all that actually worked out, would we in fact in fiscal 2012 have a balanced budget?
No. Let's step backwards for a moment. Okay. The $8.75 billion is simply to pay our current unpaid bills. So we're not talking about anything with respect to the structural deficit. We're not talking about the recurring deficit. We're simply talking about the unpaid bills. So, for example, the state of Illinois owes the University of Illinois currently about $470 million out of a $680 million appropriation. So if Governor Quinn got his way, which is to what he calls restructuring the debt, which many people would call borrowing as well, what that would simply do, just taking the University of Illinois into account, it would simply bring us up to date with respect to what the state owes us already. It would say nothing about the other approximately $200+ million that is the rest of our appropriation. It would say nothing about next year's appropriation. So it simply would be paying what they currently have appropriated. So then we're left with the question, David, of what about the recurring deficit? And recurring deficit means the gap between the revenue that we have and the recurring expenses that we have. And that gap would still be about $4 billion without taking some kinds of measures to cut spending.
And I suppose it's worth saying that, so what the governor has done, this is his initial proposal. He's made a proposal, he's put it on the table. We are a long, long way. There will be a lot of debate and a lot of argument and a lot of things to be worked through before we actually have a budget for fiscal 12.
Correct.
All right.
And there is nothing in his current proposal which talks about what we're going to do about pensions. Remember, the bill that was passed in early January simply included borrowing for this year's payment on pensions. It says nothing about the overall unfunded liability, says nothing about the growing, looming problem we have with the unfunded liability. Let's keep in mind, the state of Illinois has the largest unfunded pension liability of any state in the nation, including California and New York as well. So we have to figure out a way, not only make a single year's payment, but we have to figure out a way to fund the unfunded liability and to address the issue of recurring liability. And if we don't do that by the year 2015, 2016, we will have actually a structural deficit of $25 or $28 billion.
Did not also the state borrow money to cover the pension payment for last year?
Correct.
So this would be the second year in a row where we borrowed money to make the pension payment.
Correct.
One other thing we should talk about, a couple of times you've used the term structural deficit.
Yes.
And this is something that we need to talk about. We've talked about it before here, but something that we really need to talk about. Because what this is what you do is if you plot out on a graph, you plot expenses, what we expect the state is going to have to pay for everything the state does, and you put that against revenues, how much money we think is going to come in, you can see those two lines. Run them out into the future. And as you do that, they continue to get further and further apart. That is, the expense part keeps going up, but the revenue part is nowhere near meeting the expenses.
Even with the changes we made for income tax increases and corporate tax increases, even with those new revenues, the gap continues to grow.
I was about to ask a dumb question. Maybe I'll just go ahead and ask it. What is the problem? Some people would say that, well, actually, the answer to that question is really simple, and that is we're spending more than we're taking in. Well, I guess that's true, but is it actually as simple as that, or is it actually really more complicated than that?
Well, I think that I'd make three observations to you. First of all, the first thing I think we all need to realize is that this is not a problem we're going to solve in a single year. We took many years to get to the current situation, and it's going to take long-term discipline to get out of the situation. That's the first observation I make. So I would say, so the notion that somehow we could do something quickly and simple, we need to say that's not true, and let's get away from that. And we need to understand that the General Assembly and the governor are going to have real fiscal discipline for a number of years. Second observation I would make is that it's going to require, the long-term solution is going to require a combination of recurring spending cuts, so not single years spending, recurring spending cuts, plus additional revenue enhancement, plus some what I would call strategic borrowing. And strategic borrowing is to overcome in the short term what our problem is. So the idea that the governor has of why he calls it restructuring the debt is what he is saying is that let's take this $8.75 billion and let's say that we are going to pay the vendors, including the University of Illinois, now, but we're going to pay back the money with a bond over a period of 5 to 10 years. That's what he's calling restructuring the debt. And he's betting on the fact that by doing that, that will stimulate the economy, that it will bring people, organizations like the university, like human service organizations, back to being whole so they can be regular active economic actors, and that they will generate more revenue by being regular actors, pay more taxes, and that will be better for the Illinois economy. That's the bet that he's making. And I would say that he's correct in saying that we need to think about this in long term. And I would say he's also correct in saying that we need to pay back the vendors. I say pay back, we need to make the vendors whole. This is not money that we're begging for. It's not money that we're saying, please give it to us. This is money you appropriated. And we're in this unusual situation over the past 2 years in Illinois. For the first time ever, where appropriations seem to be meaningless.
Our guest in this hour of focus, let me just reintroduce very quickly, is Robert Rich. He is a director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. And maybe also I would put in a plug for a report that the Institute has been putting out now for a number of years. It's called the Illinois Report. And five years now, the current version is the one for 2011. You can read it. You can get a copy from them. You can read it on their website. It has a chapter about the budget situation and also a lot of other things, and they examine various aspects of policy in Illinois, things like the mortgage crisis and health care reform and Medicaid and school vouchers. So there are a number of articles here about important issues in Illinois government. So that's something that if you're interested, you take a look at.
I'd simply point out that the budget chapter is entitled Titanic and Sinking the Illinois Budget Disaster. And I would say that that's not hyperbole. That is, I think, an accurate description of of where we currently are.
Right. And for people who are listening, questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Let me ask you a slightly different question. It's also something that you have looked at IGPA. There are some people, I'm sure, who would wonder to what extent the problems that we're facing now in Illinois are a result of the big downturn in the economy, and whether we should expect, sometime within the next year or two, because that should turn around, will the economy improve to the extent that we're going to be able to gain some revenue ground here?
It's a very good question. I would say that the recession, and recessions, as you know, David, come in cycles, that this happens to be one of the worst recessions that we've had in the last 50 years. But the recession has exacerbated the problem. It's made the problem worse. But by simply recovering in the recession will not solve the problem for us. So let me say why. What's happened is that between October 2009 and October 2010, Illinois added 6,300 jobs. However, Illinois is still 450,600 jobs below its prior peak of November 2000. So prior peak November 2000, October 2010, were 450,600 jobs behind. Now, the jobs are a very important point of an economy recovering. So it's going to, and so far, we as I say, in October 2009 to October 2010, we added 6,300 jobs. Now, the governor said yesterday in his budget speech that we added jobs. He's correct. We added jobs, but we need to do a lot better. Mm-hmm. And the economy will not really recover until we've added more jobs. And once we've done that, that will add revenue. And the added revenue will help in terms of the economy. But anybody who says to you, this is simply a revenue problem, or says to you, this is simply a spending problem, or this is simply a borrowing problem, is living in fantasy world. It is not simply one of those things.
Yeah. Let me ask you a little bit more about this job growth issue, because it's also something that in the current report you look at. And certainly now job creation, both nationally and here in the state, here is a big issue. This report looks at employment and it compares Illinois with the nation. And while naturally there are going to be fluctuations, going to go up and down, Illinois has consistently lagged behind the rest of the nation in employment growth, going all the way back to, well, as far back as the numbers you have in the report, all the way back to 1980.
Right.
And the spread has widened.
Correct.
Why is it? What's that about? Why is it that we're not able to do as well as so many other states in terms of job creation?
In part, it is the structure of the economy. That is to say that we are a banking industry hub. We are a transportation hub, and those happen to be two sectors that are not growing as much as the rest of the economy. It also happens to be that Illinois is exporting more in terms of goods and services than we are importing more goods and services, and that our both our corporate tax structure and our incentives to try to keep companies are not as attractive as some other states in the Midwest.
The last month, as we have discussed, the General Assembly approved a tax increase. The personal income tax rate went from 3% to 5%.
Correct.
The corporate rate went from 4.8% to 7%.
Right.
And then these rates will be in effect until 2015, and at that point they're going to drop.
Correct.
They're going to drop back to
3%. Unless they're made permanent.
Yes, they're going to drop unless the General Assembly makes them permanent. Right now the plan is that they're going to drop. So drop back to 3.25 and 5.25. There certainly business interests in the state in the run-up to the tax increase, and I'm sure afterwards, said, well, this is going to be increasing the corporate tax rate is going to be a problem. Increasing tax rates overall, they said, is going to be a problem. And what it's going to do is it's going to discourage business in this state. People who do business here, maybe they're going to start thinking about relocating to another state and so forth. Do you think that that is true? And does the business tax environment have a big impact on, it's going back to what we were talking about before, on job creation, and is this increase in the tax rate going to be a problem?
I would say to you that it would be a problem if it were really true that our neighboring states are so much better than we are. The truth is that in terms of all of our neighboring states, the only one that has a lower overall tax rate is Indiana. The rest of them actually, in terms of combined taxes, personal and corporate and sales, are higher than we are. So in terms of a business climate, which has to do both with taxes, it also has to do with a regulatory environment and how much we are regulating businesses, I would say that Illinois is no worse off than any other state, with the possible exception of Indiana. Mm-hmm. And so the notion, for example, that the governor of New Jersey was coming in here to Chicago and trying to attract businesses in a state that is the highest taxing state in the country is absurd. Mm-hmm. So I think that was more of politics and a media event than it was reality.
Well, even also the governor of Wisconsin got some press.
Correct.
Kind of saying the same sort of thing until someone came along and pointed out, well, actually, even with the tax increase here in Illinois, the taxes are still lower than they are
Correct.
In Wisconsin.
So I don't see businesses moving as a consequence of what we did here in January to be a danger. I do think that unless we begin addressing our long-term issues in Illinois, including pensions and including job creation, that we are going to have a problem.
Yeah. Last year in the race for governor here in Illinois, this whole question of the financial problems facing the state and how to deal with them was a big issue. Candidate Quinn advocated for a tax increase. Candidate Brady said
absolutely not.
And in fact, he said what I think a lot of other Republicans in the General Assembly said. They said, look, before we talk at all about raising taxes, what we need to do is very serious cutting of spending. That's their priority. It said, we do this first, then maybe we'll talk about taxes. So we know the outcome of the election. Governor Quinn, Pat Quinn was elected. He proposed the tax increase. The General Assembly passed it. One thing that I think is interesting that you did in your report is at one point there was a lot of argument about, do we need a tax increase? Can we solve the financial problem simply by cutting? So you sat down and said, well, let us assume that we solve the problem simply by raising taxes. What would they have to be? And it turned out that if you're going to do only that, it would require a much bigger tax increase than the one that significantly bigger than the one that was put into effect.
That's correct. Let's go through what you just said. So that if we relied simply on taxes alone, you'd have to have a increase in the income tax to over 7%. You'd have to have an increase in the corporate tax to over 11%. And you'd have to have an increase in the sales tax to over 16%. None of that's going to happen.
Yeah, right. Huge.
Similarly, if you tried to rely on spending cuts alone, you'd have to have at least a 26% cut in the budget. That's not going to happen alone. And if you tried to do this on borrowing alone, the simple interest on the borrowing would consume all of our revenue in the state by the year 2019. Hmm. So none of those three strategies by themselves are going to do it. Now, let's say that there are some things we could do revenue-wise that would make a difference. So, for example, we are one of a very few number of states that did not tax pension income. And if we taxed pension income in Illinois, we would raise $1 billion just in terms of doing that. If we took the sales tax, didn't increase the rate, but broadened the what is taxed to services and simply said we're going to do the same services that Wisconsin and Iowa and other states do, we could raise somewhere between $1.5 and $4.5 billion simply by doing that. Hmm. So, and then I think on the spending side, we have to look for the spending cuts that can be made in, and it's not going to be 26% cut in spending, but it could be close to 8 to 10% cut in spending done appropriately in a targeted way. And I think if we did all of that, and then said, in addition to that, we're going to do some shorter term borrowing to make up the difference, we would then achieve one important thing. We would achieve more confidence from the bond raters who would then say, yes, Illinois is doing a good job. They're finally addressing their issues. We'll increase their bond status from junk bond status to a higher bond rating, which would make it easier for us overall economically. So, again, there are things we can do.
Hmm. Well, going back to something that you said earlier about the fact that this was a problem that grew over time. It didn't just happen overnight. And that the solution is going to take some time. It's not something that we can do quickly. Assuming that we did something like what you're talking about, this total package, now we have had some revenue enhancement. Maybe we're going to be able to find some other sources, some strategic borrowing, some serious cutting of spending. If we do all that, how many years do you think it would take to deal with this accumulated problem that we have?
And if we add pensions to it, it will take at least 5 to 8 years to get us back to a balanced status. Now, remember, the goal, David, is not simply to have a balance for 1 year. The goal is to actually address the structural deficit issues so that after these 5 years that we're not going to simply recreate the problem again. So, for example, if we simply allow the revenue enhancement that we currently have to expire in the year 2015 without having done anything else, we will, within 2 or 3 years, recreate the problem that we currently have.
Yeah, I was interested, again, one of the things that you put in the report where you're looking at what, if you did particular things and if you did them in isolation, what would be the effect? So you looked at if you just dealt with the problem by increasing taxes, what would you have to do? If you just dealt with the problem by borrowing, what would you have to do? If you just dealt with the problem by cutting spending, what would you have to do? I think it was interesting that one of the things you said was, you know, let's just assume that we freeze spending,
right,
overall spending. That doesn't actually mean that here and there you might, you know, spend more or less. But if you could just hold spending at 2011 levels, you run that out 10 years, you go to 2012, you significantly whittle away at the deficit. But even in 10 years, freezing spending, you're still going to have a deficit of a couple of billion dollars.
Correct. Right. That's right. So these solutions are not simple solutions. And we all have to understand these are going to be painful for everyone along the line. Nobody is going to be a winner, and nobody's going to be a single loser here.
I have several callers here, so we'll get them into our conversation. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we'll start out here with somebody on a cell phone, line number one, Champagne. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I have two questions. There was a statement made that corporations aren't going to move as a result of the increased taxes, and yet there's a local situation here in Champaign, which, David, you might be able to give more details about, where the corporate headquarters of Jimmy John's and the owner is threatening to take his corporate business, move it to a state where there aren't taxes because of the increased taxes, and it will have major effects on the whole of Champaign County and Champaign City because of the fact that he brings in hundreds and hundreds of corporate hotel uses per month, all sorts of ramifications. So despite saying it doesn't happen, it definitely will happen. He's planning, he says, He's not sure what state. He talked about he's moving his family to, or has moved his family to Florida. And this is someone who's a major corporate donor in the county, as well as a major taxpayer and a major driver of the economics of this county. So I think it's not quite accurate to say it's not going to happen. It just might not happen to the surrounding states. So that's the first thing. But the second thing I want to bring up is you mentioned, or what was mentioned about taxing services, sales tax on services. And I think that's a wonderful idea. However, I think I wonder if the attorneys attorneys' organizations in this state, especially since they have undue influence in the state legislature, and the doctors, to list just two, services, and maybe financial entities of various sorts, will allow a sales tax on their services. So I'd like you to discuss both of those on the air. David, I think you can probably talk to the Jimmy John's situation.
Well, actually, I think you did a pretty good job of explaining the situation. I appreciate the questions, and let me give Professor Rich a chance to talk about them.
Sure. Just to clarify, what I was saying was not that the corporate tax situation may not have an influence on businessmen and women. I was saying that by itself is not going to account for a move away from Illinois in terms of headquarters. And I think Jimmy John is not an exception here. Jimmy John's situation is a complex situation, which we don't know, need to go fully into. But I would dare say that it's not simply the raising of corporate taxes by itself that are going to cause him to switch his headquarters, if ultimately he does. I think that Jimmy John can be a very dramatic individual, and I thought it was a dramatic media event that he had, and ultimately it'll be interesting to see what he does. With respect to the your other point about the broadening the sales tax to include services, you're making a really good point, and it underscores what I was trying to say before. Everyone is going to have to pitch in, and this is going to be somewhat painful to everybody. And the reason why I think the broadening of the sales tax to include services wasn't passed in January is exactly for the reasons that you described. So I think that broadening the sales tax, I think, is part of the long-term solution, but you're absolutely correct. It's not going to be easy to achieve.
Well, let me get in one more tax question here real quick, and then promise I get back to callers. We talked earlier about the fact that the General Assembly did in January approve this increase in the personal income tax rate from 3 to 5%. And now that's a flat 5%.
Correct.
And that is something that it's going to affect people much more seriously on the lower end of the income scale and higher. And I think that there are a lot of people who have been arguing for some time in this state that we need some tax restructuring and that we really should move in the direction of a graduated tax. Do you think that there is some real possibility that such a thing might happen?
Well, first of all, let's point out if we did that, that would require a constitutional amendment. The 1970 Constitution from Illinois forbids that. That meaning a progressive tax. Now, Governor Quinn yesterday said he's going to create a new revenue commission to look at the tax code in Illinois and make it more fair. And the truth is, even if this new commission were to recommend a progressive tax, it would require a constitutional amendment to implement. Do I think we're going to get a constitutional amendment? I don't think so anytime in the near future.
Yeah, it's obviously extremely difficult. Extremely difficult. All right. Let's talk with Champaign County, line two. Hello.
Hi. Just a couple things about language. You don't have to say revenue enhancements. It's much better just to say taxes and get it out there. I'm not opposing it, but I don't think a euphemism is necessary. And as far as debt restructuring, if indeed the money that they're talking about to borrow on a bond is indeed money that's already owed at a rate that's higher than what they can get, then it is debt restructuring. Now, the arguments I heard on the coverage from public media last night, Illinois public media from Springfield, was that there's $720 million or a half a billion dollars from various sources that goes beyond the simple services rendered payments. So I don't know whether that's paying it forward. An interesting thing on that subject that Quinn brought up that I hadn't heard is that there's a 6% on average cost for contracts let out by the state of Illinois that's basically just for the time cost of money, because they know they're not going to get paid on time, so they program that into the front end of the contract. So, that is another savings that that could happen. Now, on a broader question, obviously the climate in Washington isn't such that there'll be any revenue sharing. They already tried that a little bit, and it was kind of lame. But in the past, these counter-cyclical things did happen. I mean, even under Nixon, there was revenue sharing. So it seems to me that the tax discussion obviously just treated what the problem is in Illinois, but the fact that things like a transaction tax on a national scale isn't even talked about. I didn't know the UK has had that for decades, so it isn't that wild of an idea. But that kind of discussion, going where the money is, when the head of Goldman Sachs just got his base rate salary tripled and got one of the hugest bonuses on record, and that I believe Stiglitz said that bonuses paid out this year amount to 1% of the GDP to corporate executives, that's where the money is, and we have to start looking at that, if whether it's business friendly or not. I mean, if we're going to have uneducated people sleeping in the streets and the kind of mayhem that could happen if draconian things occur. I mean, anyway, that's
well. Let's get some response here. Go ahead.
I think what Governor Quinn has in mind is mostly debt restructuring, so I agree with the comment that the caller made, and I think we do have to have a national discussion about tax reform as well. But today I think we have sufficient problems in Illinois. We can focus on Illinois.
Mm, all right. Well, we also have about 10, 12 minutes left in this part of Focus. I have some other callers. Our guest in this hour is Robert Rich. He is a director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the University of Illinois, also professor in the College of Law. And he is here to talk with us about the Illinois budget, and questions are welcome. And we have a couple of people holding. We'll try to get everybody in the time that remains, and we'll go next to Champaign, and this is line 3. Hello.
Hi, Bob. I'm a longtime admirer of your ability to analyze situations, and what you've described thus far is what should happen. My question is, do you believe that there is the will within the state, both among elected officials and the populace, however general that term may be, to undergo the pain and the discipline to rectify this complex situation?
The short answer is yes, and the reason why I'm optimistic about this is because I think that it's becoming increasingly clear to almost everyone that we have a crisis that absolutely has to be dealt with, and one of the reasons why I'm optimistic is because the General Assembly did act the way it did in early January. A lot of people who said that the Speaker and the President of the Senate would never do what they did in early January, and I think it's just the first move among many that need to be done. I'm also encouraged, frankly, that Speaker Madigan really for the first time signaled about 10 days ago that pension reform was required. You wouldn't have expected to hear that from the Speaker in past years.
I hope you're right. Thank you.
All right. Over to Belgium next. Line 4. Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. And in your discussion so far today, I've never really heard an answer or even any discussion about what I'm going to ask you about, and that is this. Like any other situation, if I don't pay my bills and I go into foreclosure and bankruptcy, I have a penalty to pay. In the state, and since Illinois is the leading state for this possibility to happen, What happens if a state goes bankrupt? Do we all have to move out? Do we get foreclosed on? What exactly will happen to us if we totally go bankrupt?
That's another very good question. And up to now, I think the discussion of bankruptcy, which has been discussed, including by our junior senator from Illinois, Senator Kirk, I'm not sure anybody really knows what we mean by bankruptcy for a state. I think what people imagine in their mind is that by declaring us bankrupt, we somehow won't have to pay that $8 billion in unpaid bills, and we can simply put it aside and then make as if we're going to simply move forward. I think there are a growing number of people who say, including the President of the United States, who say that's not an acceptable alternative. So I consider the bankruptcy discussion to be part of the media frenzy and hyperbole that is not in the feasible range.
All right. Well, I hope that gets to the question. We'll just keep on going here. We'll go next to Decatur, line one. Hello.
Yes, I'm on board with all of your comments. And I liked especially your approach to tackling this problem on a broad basis by nibbling away at various parts of it. One comment I'd like to have you at least, or one thing, thought I'd like to have you comment on is the amount of inflation we're enduring. Bernanke, as you know, has got the printing presses humming, and the dollar lost its value about 20% last year. So if we owed $10 billion in 2010, we owe $8 billion in real dollar terms. And if you were to go back to that $1 billion that was owed a long time ago, that's probably only a third of that. So if we could cap our current expenditures and maybe borrow the money to pay off and bring our current expenses up to date, the amount of money we owe to various services, if we could cap expenditures and just wait it out, in real dollar terms, it seems to me, both pension-wise and in the amount of money we owe, that's going to go down with relative to the income we're going to have. So I'd like to have your comment on that.
I think it's going to go down, but as we talked about, and we talked about it in the report, simply freezing spending won't solve the problem, even taking inflation into account. Simply freezing spending will leave us with about a $2 billion debt, even taking inflation into account. So you're making an interesting point, but it doesn't solve the problem.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, we, in terms of cutting spending, there are a whole lot of things you could cut to save money here and there. But clearly there are some things where the big money is. That's really what you have to concentrate on. And one of the things we talked about was pensions for state workers. Medicaid, those are also big things. So where, and maybe I've just named the three biggest things, where is the big money, the things that you really must cut if you're going to realize the kind of savings that we're talking about?
You've talked about Medicaid is a place, although I will tell you that with the new federal regulations, it's very difficult to cut Medicaid.
Yeah.
Pensions is definitely an area where we need to have some restructuring. And you might want to have a program sometime in the future just devoted to pensions, but that's another area. Some parts of education, some parts of human services, although education and human services are going to be a relatively small amount of money. So it's gonna be in the big items. It's gonna be in Medicaid and pensions that we have to look for some real long-term savings.
And for obviously, we have when we talk about pension reform, we have a small conflict of interest here. Since we participate in the system, a lot of people who are listening to us do. So for those people who are saying, so you really think that, for example, in the future, we should expect to see the state start to tax the benefit. There are some other things that have been discussed, including having people start to pay part of the cost of health insurance, possibly restricting the cost of living increase that's built in. You think that it's likely that all of those things will happen?
First of all, I want to say that I think there's, again, a constitutional question here. And I think the constitutional question, which will be tested, will be, can the state change the pensions that you and I have, David? And I think the answer to that is no. I think from a constitutional perspective that the state can't say to us that your pension formula is now different than it was when you were first hired. Beyond that, I think what the state can do, and I think will do, is it can do three things. It can say you're going to have to start paying taxes on your pension benefits. Mm-hmm. It can say you're going to have to pay more for your health care benefits. And it can say you're going to have to start contributing more to your pensions as well. And then it can say for people who are now coming into the pension system, which it has said already, that your pension is different. But simply saying you're not going to pay taxes on it, and you're going to pay more for your health care benefits, and you're going to contribute more to your pensions, that would get quite a bit of revenue by itself.
Yeah. All right. We'll try to get here some more callers, and we'll go to Quad Cities, line two. Hello.
Yes, very good discussion. And a question with respect to imposing the income tax on the pensions, were you going to attempt to impose it on the ones living out of state in saving the $1 billion?
Anybody who receives a Illinois pension would have to pay Illinois income taxes, yes.
And so someone like myself living here in Iowa, I would be subject then to double taxation because I'm paying tax on it in the state of Iowa now.
Well, there would have to be some formula where you wouldn't be necessarily subject to double taxation, just like there's a formula right now for people who are paying taxes in more than one state for what they're actually paying taxes on.
So would that end up being a hardship on me, or would I be about in the same spot I am now?
I think you'd be in about the same spot. I think you'd be in about the same spot you are right now.
Okay, and another question. If you were to impose a charge for the insurance on the university employees and all the state of Illinois employees, a charge that those of us that are in the community college insurance program and TRS now are already paying, say, roughly $300 a month, would that significantly lower the expense for the state?
I'm not sure. I don't
know. Okay, and I'll just close here and make one comment with regard to that multifaceted suggestion you made to the state of Illinois for dealing with this. Here in Iowa, we already have a state income tax that's more progressive than the one in Illinois. We already have taxes on services, and we pay taxes on pensions. And would you believe we're surviving just fine? And that includes situations like the Quad Cities where businesses, et cetera, individuals could move right over into Illinois if that were a burden on them.
I agree with you. I agree with your analysis fully, which is one of the reasons why I was saying why I was prescribing the direction I think we should go in.
Right. I think you've done a good job today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And just to underscore what the caller says is that for people who are retirees, state employees from the University of Illinois, currently in the state of Illinois, you live in Illinois, your pension benefit is not taxed.
From the state. You pay correct. Federal income tax, but
right.
You don't pay state income
right.
tax.
Right. It is not, okay. Yes. Very important. It is not taxed by the state of Illinois. But there, if you move to some other state, Iowa is one of them, and there are a number of other states where that state does tax the benefit that you receive from the state of Illinois.
Correct.
So, yeah, all right. Let's see if we can do quick one more. We'll go to Spring Bay. Hello.
Yes, good morning. This isn't like solving global climate change. It seems to me that the reality is clear. We have to cut spending and raise some revenue. The question is, I guess, do we have the political will to accomplish that? And the legislature, to me, their first responsibility is to determine how they're going to spend public funds, tax money. And I think they've been very irresponsible here in the past 15 years or so in not doing a very good job of that. And that's my comment, and I'll get off and listen to the rest of the program.
All right. I don't know. I think you would say a lot of other people. Well, as you have said, the issue here, it's something that developed over a long period of time, and that it's something that happened. Both Republicans and Democrats have participated in this, so we can be bipartisan in our criticism of state government going back many decades.
Correct. This is a Republican and Democratic problem, and it's both share plenty of blame. And I think Republicans and Democrats have to work together to solve the problem, as opposed to blaming each other and pointing the finger and hoping that in pointing the finger they'll win the next election.
Well, now correct me on this. When the tax increase was passed in January, did that pass without any Republican
vote? Without one single Republican vote.
All right. So the Democrats do, it sounds like they have the votes to pass whatever without Republican support. So how do you think that that's going to, will there indeed be some cooperation here?
They can't pass whatever. So for example, this debt restructuring is going to require a 60% vote, not a 50% vote. So they're going to have to get some Republican votes in order to pass.
So that's why it really matters when we have many Republicans in General Assembly saying we do not favor this borrowing plan that the governor has proposed.
And also, one of our callers pointed this out. It does make a difference whether or not you call it simple borrowing or whether you call it debt restructuring. And I think that both Speaker Madigan and President Cullerton and the governor are correct in talking about it as debt restructuring. That's not a euphemism for borrowing.
Right. We're going to have to stop for right now. This certainly is a story that we will continue to follow, and there's an awful lot of ground here that's going to have to be covered between this point and when we actually have a budget for the next fiscal year, which is not that far away at this point, about 4.5 months, I think, at this point. So we'll leave it at that with our thanks to Bob Rich. He is director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Thank you very much. And again, if folks want to take a look at the current version of the Illinois Report, that's the one for 2011, takes up this and other issues, go to probably the easiest thing to do is go to the website of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. You can read it there or you can get a copy for yourself. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.